Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Christmas Eve 2015 broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the December 24th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. This is our annual Christmas Eve show, and I'm not expecting a lot of listeners tonight on the eve of Christmas. Everybody's all wrapped up in their package wrapping and last-minute errands, plus the family celebrations for Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve was when our family traditionally celebrated Christmas. Christmas Day was a much quieter affair, and I generally, being from New York originally, although I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area now, I gear my Christmas Eve celebration to New York time, so even though I'm on Central Time, I consider Christmas Day to start at 11 p.m. Central, and that's kind of the benchmark I'll use in this show. My Christmas Eve show is just a reflective show. Like I said, don't expect much in the way of audience participation. It's kind of a personal marker to reflect on what has gone on during the past year, and I expect the show to be short, no, certainly not longer than an hour, probably much shorter than that. It won't be too political, and the Blog Talk Radio staff is off for the holiday. I see a message on their bulletin board that they are basically have closed on Christmas Eve the whole day, and they won't be back until Monday, the 28th. So if there are technical issues, we will just have to live with them or terminate the show early, because there is nobody to get help from on the holiday weekends at Blog Talk Radio. Like I said, the show won't be very political. I do want to just mention two things related to the world of affairs and politics. Number one is the recently concluded budget deal. There are some good things in the budget deal. Making the tax extenders permanent is a good thing. The tax extenders are an annual drama. There are provisions of the tax code that have tax breaks for taxpayers that when they were enacted on a temporary basis, and the tax breaks are very popular. So every year there is this drama of whether they will be extended or not, and for some taxpayers, the tax extenders are very significant. Things like accelerated depreciation for small business, certain tax credits, education tax credits, earned income tax credit, child tax credit, stuff like that. So to not extend them is unpopular and would cost a lot of taxpayers money, but the pressure to extend them gives a lot of leverage for wheeling and dealing in the Congress, and it's not very productive to good budget legislation. So by making some of these tax extenders permanent, maybe we will have more rationality in the budget cycle in future years. And then there were some other things in it that business wanted, like the oil export provision. But the problem with the budget deal, and I think reason why a lot of people are angry with it, is that strategy involves making choices. And the tax breaks and the Chamber of Commerce-friendly provisions don't compensate for the lack of spending discipline. And granting of a lot more worker visas is illustrative of another problem that we have, which is the refusal to recognize the porous nature of our borders and the damage that that does to our economy and to the rule of law in the U.S. So we're in denial about our borders. We're in denial about the challenge of assimilation of all these people coming into the United States. And we're especially in denial about the rampant and uncontrolled spending, the deficit spending that we are doing. And all the tax breaks in the world are going to break down if we don't get our spending under control, because the government will outstrip any economic growth that the tax breaks produce. And in the long run, the pressure to raise taxes will be really irresistible if we don't fix the spending problem. And then just one last thing on taxes. I just want to remind anyone who listens to this show, which will probably be people listening in archive, that the deadline for charitable contributions that you can write off on your return is December 31st, so that's just a week away. And it's important that you keep all your charitable contribution receipts because in audit situations, the IRS may ask to see those receipts and may not accept canceled checks or just an entry on a credit card statement. They may want to see the actual receipt from the charity. So good record keeping is very important. We will be doing, in future shows, little blips about tax-related matters that might be of interest to the listeners. Okay. Well, just some thoughts about the holidays. You know, the Christmas holidays are hopefully wonderful for everybody listening and for everybody in the country. But we all know that sometimes the holidays can be very painful. Tragedy can occur during the holidays. Hopefully that is not an experience that many people will have. But many people will have the experience of perceiving the holidays as a bittersweet occasion, because the holidays are full of situations where there is a conflict between the inspiration that's driven by the Christmas season and the hopes of the season, and then the reality of human life and the reality of human nature. Even though you want to get into the spirit of the holiday and all of the wonderful emotions that it engenders, life does interfere with it, and there are a lot of things in life that you know, run counter to the spirit of the holiday. So for my first clip that I want to play is just a short clip from Miracle on 34th Street about the problem of the commercialization of Christmas. And it's a cute little clip from a very famous movie, and I'll have a few remarks about the movie after the clip.
Before you go up on the floor, I just want to give you a few tips on how to be a good Santa Claus.
Go right ahead.
Well, here's a list of toys that we have to push, you know, things that we're overstocked on. Now, you'll find that a great many children will be undecided as to what they want for Christmas. When that happens, you immediately suggest one of these items. You understand?
I certainly do.
Good. Now, you memorize that list, and I'll... I'll tell you. When you've finished, come up to the 7th floor. I'll be waiting for you.
Imagine. Making a child take something it doesn't want just because he bought too many of the wrong toys. That's what I've been fighting against for years, the way they commercialize Christmas.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around this world, but one of the worst is commercialism. Make a buck, make a buck. Even in Brooklyn, it's the same. Don't care what Christmas stands for. Just make a buck, make a buck.
Well, that was a clip from the Christmas Carol. I mean, Christmas Carol, The Miracle on 34th Street. I was watching The Christmas Carol earlier in the evening, the classic 1951 version, and it's one of my, I think Miracle on 34th Street, the 1951 British Christmas Carol, and oddly enough, The Apartment, another famous old movie made in 1960, are my favorite holiday movies, even though The Apartment is not, strictly speaking, a holiday movie, but it occurs around the holidays, and there are a lot of messages in it that are of real relevance to the holidays. As far as Miracle on 34th Street is concerned, here you have the classic collision between idealism and realism in a Christmas setting. The realism is the very common sense character played by screen legend Maureen O'Hara, who is just determined to be very hard-headed and realistic in her approach to life, and she has a very imaginative and spirited daughter, and she's trying to get the daughter not to, you know, to be, you know, to grow up much faster than she should and adopt her own approach to life. And of course, her nemesis in this is the boyfriend played by John Payne, and of course the character of Santa. The character's name is Kris Kringle. So very great movie. Just a note on Maureen O'Hara, again, screen legend. She passed away in 2015. She had an illustrious career in film, as we all know, and also quite a career in business. She was married to Charles Blair, an aviation pioneer, an Air Force Brigadier General, a Pan Am chief pilot, and then he became an airline executive running Antilles airboats. And when he passed away, Maureen O'Hara took over the business for a few years and ran it pretty successfully. Very classy lady. She was buried at Arlington National Cemetery in 2015, and it seems very appropriate, having made one of the all-time classic Christmas movies, that we take this opportunity to mark her passing and her achievement and her life and her career. Want to check chat and see if anything needs attention there? Looks like a quiet night. The chat is open if anybody wants to participate in it, and if anybody wants to call into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. Like I said, I don't anticipate much in the way of audience interaction on Christmas Eve, where people are probably finishing up a very busy day and preparing for another busy day tomorrow. Well, the other thing that happens a lot at Christmas time is the family dynamics, the complications of family dynamics, and it just seems very appropriate to take a look at that. Lots of movies and television shows go into the complicated dynamics of family life at Christmas time, where people are thrown together for the holidays, but there are all these conflicts bubbling below the surface. And one of my favorite shows in terms of looking at family dynamics is the Frasier show. And this particular clip I'm going to play is not strictly a Christmas clip, but I think it's a very good illustration of just the complications that people have in their family relationships at this time of year. Family structures are much more convoluted and involved than they used to be, with divorces and blended families and all the rest of it that's added to the traditional family feuds and the people who could never get along within the same family. So I'm going to play this clip, which I think is a very funny one, and it has to do with Frasier, who's living in Seattle. He's recently started his career as a radio host, and he gets a visit from his ex-wife, an unexpected visit, and he's kind of tricked by his producer when she calls into his show to criticize about an advice he's giving to one of his callers who's calling for psychological advice. Well, Lilith being Lilith, takes a different line than Frasier professionally, and his producer, Roz, just laps it all up, and then she contrives to force him to invite her for dinner. So, kind of funny clip, and we'll play that next.
Well, Lilith, what brings you to Seattle, the constant rain?
I'm here for a convention, and I happen to hear your voice on the radio. I kept hoping you'd introduce Pearl Jam's latest hit, but much to my chagrin, you were doling out worthless little advice pellets from your psychiatric Pez dispenser.
Well, I guess you'll be rushing off to your little convention now, and I suppose we'll just have to catch up on your next trip.
Actually, I'm not doing anything for dinner tonight.
Really? Well, then you'll want to keep your dial tuned to 780 for Gil Chesterton's Restaurant Beat.
Why don't you ask her to dinner, Dr. Crane?
What a wonderful idea. And let me tell you why, Seattle. You see, even though our marriage was unsuccessful, Lilith and I are quite capable of conducting ourselves as adults and even enjoying spending some time together from time to time. So, Lilith, 7 at my place?
Sounds great.
In my day, when two people broke up, you were mad, you were angry, you hated each other. But whatever happened to the sanctity of divorce?
Dad, you never liked Lilith.
She's weird.
She is not weird.
Oh, she's weird.
Well, maybe she's a little strange.
No, Maris is a little strange. Lilith is weird.
Excuse me, Dad, I had no idea you preferred my wife to Frasier's.
My head.
Can I get you an aspirin, Daphne?
Oh, no, I'm afraid those are useless. This is one of my psychic headaches. There's some kind of negative force out there. I only get these when there's a clawing at the cosmic continuum.
Perhaps if someone rubbed your temples. I'm sure she wants privacy while she contacts the mothership. Frasier, I must tell you. I'm here for support, but I will not speak to Lilith. Oh, Miles, this ongoing feud between you and Lilith is ridiculous. Let it go. It was years ago.
I can't even remember what the fight was about in the first place.
Well, let me refresh you. At our wedding, while Maris was reciting her vows, which she wrote herself, vows of love from the heart, I distinctly heard snickering. I glanced behind me, and there was Lilith, her fingers pressed hard against her lips, her body shaking like a paint mixer. Why, now there she is. Oh, my God. Now, listen, it's just one evening out of your life. Will you at least try to be civil? All right, but I refuse to be warm. Hello, Lilith.
Frasier.
Please come in. Let me take these things for you. There we are. Oh, look who's here.
Hello, Martin. Hello, Niles.
Hello.
Where's Maris?
She's visiting her sister in Chicago.
Oh. I thought perhaps she was sailing up the transplendent river of your love. Frasier, I like what you've done with your apartment.
Thank you.
You have some beautiful things.
The settlement is final, Lily.
Go away.
Well, why does he listen to you and not to me?
By the tone of my voice, he senses I mean business.
Oh, I see. You're saying your voice is more commanding than mine is? Hell, I took a half a step before I realized she was talking to the dog.
Well, that was a classic Frasier and Lilith moment from the comedy series Frasier. This kind of scene goes on all the time across the country as families do get thrown together. And, you know, there may be very deep bonds of affection there, but there are also conflicts and memories of conflicts and unresolved issues, and of course that always adds to the stress factor of the holidays. So I like to play these clips just to get a more realistic portrayal of the holiday, because I think that one of the biggest stresses that we have in dealing with Christmas is the kind of reluctance of popular culture to address the fact that there is a conflict between the idealized image of the holidays and the reality of daily life. And of course, with the image manipulation capability of modern media, it is easier and easier to project a more and more perfect image of the holidays. And people subconsciously try to live up to it, and then, of course, they run up against the brick wall of reality, and it gets very stressful for a lot of people. So I think it would be, it's always healthy to recognize what goes on in the real world of living, as opposed to the ideal world of the holidays as portrayed in the mass media. Well, I'm coming to the end of my prepared remarks, and I think now I'm going to move from tempestuous family dynamics to a traditional Christmas carol, so we will play Adeste Fidelis.
Thank you.
Well, that was Adeste Fidelis, and of course that is the in the English version version that is "O Come All Ye Faithful," a very, you know, oomph laden Christmas carol hymn, very popular in church services, and I thought I would play that in keeping with the spirit of the evening. Well, approaching the end, like I said, of my prepared remarks, so I want to go out with an observation on, I'm talking about the conflict between the spirit of the holidays and the reality of life, and there is nowhere where that is more important, more apparent than in social media, and many people who listen to this show are involved in social media in one way or another. And, you know, we all get involved with social media for the best of reasons. I mean, we care about what happens to our society. We care about what happens to our country. We care about the future of our country. We care about the future of our families and friends in the, you know, often troubled times faced by the country. And yet social media, the practicalities of social media are all about a certain type of commercialization, the mania for presence and recognition and clicks and hits and buzz. If your social media presence has a commercial aspect to it, well, then the pressure gets really intense to you know, make, to generate revenue, ad revenue, or whatever kind of revenue that you get. And even if you're not involved in it for in a commercial application, people do want recognition. They do want their ideas respected and validated. And you often run into the conflict with people who have different ideas, who do not approve of yours, who have different views than you do about faith, about politics, about political candidates. And there is a tendency for civility to break down in social media, and you see these spectacles of, you know, these feuds, these ranting feuds that obsess people on with social media, with, you know, clashing Facebook posts and clashing tweets and clashing arguments. And, you know, they get really personal. And in a way, it's worse than having face-to-face contact with people that you disagree with, because there's nobody that can answer back, and there's no personal social interaction to damp down the intensity of the disagreements and even the anger. So social media is risky terrain, and especially in the holiday season, it really can conflict with the spirit of the holidays and what we want to happen during the holidays. So to kind of mark that reality, I'm going to play a couple of clips from the English comedy, The Vicar of Dibley. And this particular episode is called Celebrity Vicar, in which the vicar, the character's name is Geraldine Granger, is generating some media buzz because of her status as one of the first female vicars, and because she does have a sort of natural talent for communication. So she's getting it booked on interviews, and she's getting more and more publicity, and it starts going to her head, and it has very bad consequences for her and the people around her who, because of things that happen in her publicity campaign, get satirized and lampooned by the British media. So the first clip is where she's getting all excited about her social media and media presence. So we'll play that.
Well, I think I grooved.
What am I talking about, I think? That was a total triumph. The journalist is coming here to speak to people about Saint Geraldine of Dibley. Yes, that is the headline.
Oh, I tell you, kids, if I don't watch out, I'm going to turn into the most famous religious personality in the country.
But more famous than Jesus?
I'm not famous than Jesus, obviously. I mean, he's had longer to work on his act. But as for Sister Wendy, well, out of the pool, tooth girl.
The thing I love about you is the way you're famous, but you haven't changed at all.
I got the paper.
Oh, exciting. My moment of glory. What's it like?
Well, it's not exactly what I expected.
Oh, my. God knows how this happened.
Well, that's the first clip from The Vicar of Dibley, and that scene ends where she's opening a tabloid newspaper, and the reporter from the tabloid doing a piece on her, interviews a lot of the people in the village and portrays them in the most unflattering light imaginable, and that paper reaches every part of the British Isles. So naturally the villagers are mortified and they feel abused and used and abused because they've been used as props for Geraldine's just determination to make a presence for herself in the media. But it has a happy ending, though, because what Geraldine does to make amends is she basically lampoons herself in a village theatrical, and she's able to do that. And you'd have to see the episode. There's a famous ballerina, Darcy Bustle, and she's invited to play in this village celebration. And Geraldine, who's a very chunky lady, appears on stage with her in ballerina outfit. But the point is, obviously, Geraldine is not a talented ballerina. She can't be. It's not in her nature to be. And it makes the point that you shouldn't try to be something that you're not, even at the especially at the expense of the people close to you. Well, it all goes very well. The villagers laugh, and Geraldine is forgiven, and this is how the episode ends.
Why would anyone be stupid enough to want fame and fortune when you can have the stars at night and a proper friend by your side?
Oh, nice.
So, what do you call a budgie that's been run over by a lawnmower?
I don't know. What do you call a budgie that's been run over by a lawnmower?
Shredded tweet.
So the budgie's dead, then?
Yes, I think so. Shredded tweet.
I didn't even see the lawnmower coming. How did he know that death was just round the corner?
Look, I'm not going to tell you these jokes anymore if you're going to keep on responding like this. It's not a real budgie, okay? It's not a real lawnmower. It's just a joke.
So the budgie's not dead?
No, he never got born.
Never got born?
No.
Poor little thing. Oh, so much beauty. So much potential. Had never got born. Never saw the light of the sun or felt the delicate rustle of the breeze through its feathers.
Mm. Get out now. Go on. Get out.
Well, I thought that the shredded tweet joke would be a good way to close the show because having witnessed all of these Twitter storms during the past year, it is clear that social media does have a way of unhinging people. Well, I've come to the end of my prepared remarks. I want to wish everybody who may listen to this show in archives a blessed and safe and happy and merry Christmas. We'll be back next week for a New Year's show, and we'll really do a retrospective on the year gone by, and hopefully have some discussion about the year coming up, especially the consuming subject of the presidential election. So have a wonderful Christmas. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Night.